Hey, it's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Hope you're enjoying your start of your weekend. It's Friday night, 10 o'clock. We've got a truncated hour. We feel bad because I called it yesterday that the Hawks should blow up this team. Nobody listened to me. Now it's two in a row. No, they lose tonight to the Panthers, but not a big deal. As we talked to Scott last night, we talked to Judd. I talked enough times to know regular season hockey is a game. It's not a game of inches. It's a game of yards. What's bigger than inches? Yards. Right. It's a game of miles. How about that? But, yeah, the Hawks still sitting pretty. But, you know, got to figure out Darling in goal and all that kind of stuff. Don't make sure that they don't match the 12-game winning streak with a 12-game losing streak. All right, we're on the air till 11 o'clock tonight when Patty Vasquez will take over. Coming up, Sam Panjanovic from WGN Sports going to talk about a little hard court. We're going to talk the Bulls who lost to the Celtics tonight. You know, we saw in Cleveland, they got rid of their coach. Coach David Blatt fired today in Cleveland, even though they're the number one seed. Hey, it's not working in Chicago. You got a team that is struggling to stay in the top part of the East. Right now, the 4 seed, but could easily, with 2 more losses, be the 8 seed. It doesn't seem to be working chemistry-wise with Fred Hoiberg. Could it be possible to blow up the Bulls? I don't know if that's going to happen. That doesn't sound like a Bulls-type thing to do, but that could be. I mean, Cleveland is serious about it, and they want to win now. And what about the Bulls? Talk about that. We'll talk about verbal commitments, too. You know, you saw the story with Jim Harbaugh, Coach Harbaugh, out at the University of Michigan, canceling or going back on some of the verbal commitments of the 2016 class, including one kid here in Downers Grove. We'll talk about verbal commitments and how often that happens. And that's interesting, to think about what happens to the kids when they're told this close to, essentially go find somewhere else to go to school. I was reading all about that. A lot of the schools, they'll say, you can still go here. You just can't play football on the team. But they don't want to do that because they were stars. They want to play football. So, yeah, we'll talk about that. And also, the big Morgan Park Simeon game is back on. So, congratulations. The boycott worked. They're going to play that game, and they're going to play it in Morgan Park. So, we will talk about that with Sam Panjanovic. But first, you know what? Let's do the carryout. This is the nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. A sad day for the state of Illinois. Our government forced layoffs at the Chicago School District. Hundreds were given pink slips as CPS tries to cover a $500 million hole in their budget. Money they believe is owed to them by the state, by the way. With open positions, over 400 jobs were eliminated. And then at the end of the day today, it was announced that the Lutheran Child and Family Services Agency was shutting down. Shutting down because the state owes them about $6 million. LSSI employs about 750 people, and they serve about 5,000. So this week, a lot of politics, a ton of ideology, a hefty portion of power struggle. And at the end of the day, over 1,000 people, people who live in this state, the state of Illinois, lost their job. And it's only the third week of January. 2016 is looking up. You know, there's a moral obligation at play here. If you want to fix the way the state regulates workers' comp, or pays its workers, or even how long we let lawmakers stay in Springfield, fine, I'm for that. But at what cost? At the cost of ending InTouch home care for seniors in Rockford, or the veterans programs in Streamwood, or mental health counseling in Downers Grove, or the alcohol and drug treatment in Elgin? It's irresponsible, and it seems to only be the beginning. What happens if Catholic Charities can't keep its doors open, or the Chicago homeless shelter system folds? Or heck, what happens if we start laying off nurses and teachers, social workers and police officers and firefighters? That would never happen. Right? Right. I guess at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, what kind of state do you want to live in? Is firing 1,000 plus people worth winning a political fight? And if anyone who thinks that, should they be allowed to be in Springfield? Will there be a moment where our lawmakers look back and realize that their line in the sand approach to governing the state of Illinois was wrong? Then what? Will the next politician be able to bring back domestic abuse shelters in Chicago? Or how about senior services in Sterling, Illinois? Because something tells me that's not going to be easy. This is bad. It's very bad. These workers today who lost their jobs, they weren't political. They weren't scheming to rip off taxpayers. Heck, they probably weren't even taxing the bottom line. I come from a family of social workers. Most of the people laid off today probably didn't even make $35,000 a year. My mom didn't help people who wanted to commit suicide because it was politically advantageous. My dad didn't help people retrain and find employment because it meant his political party would get ahead. They did it because that's what we do. That's what we do in a moral society. Again, that's what we are, right? And this isn't just about one political party. Being delinquent $6 million doesn't happen overnight. And haggling politically over schools and education, that's not new either. And we're talking about years of both party rule in the state. And I'm like everyone else. I want to see change. I want to see progressive, socially conscious change, regardless of politics. Do the job we sent you to Springfield to do. Balance the books, set a reasonable expectation for what I have to pay as a taxpayer, and above all else, make decisions that benefit our society as a whole. That's not hard to, no one disagrees with that, right? Governing the people of this state is more than press conferences and fundraisers, campaign ads, and ideology. It's not about being CEO, and it's not about being a power boss. It's about being a man or woman who protects and serves the people of Illinois, not your politics, and obviously not your friends. This is the job. And if you can't handle it, let's find someone else who can. And if you think this is a Chicago issue, let me read some of the services that are going to be shut down by LSSI. You got Elgin. These are all sorts of stuff. I mean, from alcohol and drug treatment, like I said, to residents, to residential rehab, to community-based counseling, youth services, reentry services, senior services, veteran services, all the way down the line. Berwyn, Des Plaines, Downers Grove, Elmhurst, Mendota, Prospect Heights, Wheaton, Dixon, Villa Park, Sterling, Nachusa, East St. Louis, Alton. Counties like DeKalb, Kendall, LaSalle, Stevenson, Joe Davies, Rock Island, Henry, Peoria, Marshall, Stark, Tazewell, Woodford, Streamwood, Moline. The list goes on and on and on. So if you're listening right now and you believe this is a state versus Chicago thing, it's not. 1,000 people lost their job today. 1,000. We'll be right back. This is Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. 309 just texted in. Rauner has offered to compromise on several positions. Name one concession from the Democrats. Again, and you know, as I said in this piece, and obviously this person didn't catch that emotion, that I didn't, it's not political to me. Because, you know, Rauner wants something that will change the status quo. And that's the problem, is that he wants to go in and he wants to change things. He wants to say, you know what, we're going to change some stuff. We're gonna move this stuff around because this is what I think as a governor is going to make the state better. Okay. Stuff has not been able to get through because he doesn't have the votes. Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling argue about this on Touche on Mondays all the time. So that doesn't mean that you hold the stuff hostage and places go under. There needs to be a compromise to get a budget in place. And anyone who says that you know, it's short-sighted or that I'm new to the game, you listen to the Download since we started in April. I've had lawmakers on this show. I have talked about how is it possible that we have no budget. Jim Edgar came into, you know, we talked to him on the show about what it takes to compromise in Springfield. That is what being a politician is about. You can't just go in there and say no, because What's happening right now is both sides are doing that. And I am, as I said, Illinois does not need a CEO and Illinois does not need a political boss. That is not only about Bruce Rauner. It's about Mike Madigan and the Democratic Party in Springfield. But I have to say, this is not acceptable. And it shouldn't be acceptable to you at home either. It doesn't matter what your politics are. It shouldn't be that at the end of the day, hey, you know what? We really want to have a Republican governor, and we want a more fiscally conservative state. So you know what we'll do? We're just going to play a game of chicken, and hopefully nothing. Oh, 1,000 people got laid off. Well, okay. No, that's not how it should be. Those are services for people who need those services, and I'm not talking about people who, you know, we're talking about seniors. I mean, that's the one that I think should resonate. You know, we're talking about all the in-house senior services and elderly care that LSSI offers people, and that's gone. And it's gone because we need to reform workers' comp. I don't know. There's more going on in the news, but that seemed to be the big one. And I understand there's going to be political ideology on both sides about what it means, but I think that, you know, this will be something that Dave and Chris can talk about on Monday, because I will hold them both to the fire saying this is absolutely irresponsible for our state government. No one should be, if there is a agreement that the state will pay certain services certain amount of money, then the state has to pay that money. And if they fall behind and don't pay, and they're $6 million behind, $6 million bucks. LSSI was getting 85% of their money from the state. Why? Because it's not a for-profit business. It's just the bottom line. And I don't think you want to get into a game where we have for-profit people making profit off or helping the less fortunate. Maybe you do, but I don't. I think that's why we have government, and that's why I pay taxes. The amount of money that I pay goes to being able to have a society that helps the people that are at the bottom, to help them, to help. You know what? I want to give back. So I give back for services so I can have safety and protection, good schools so I can send my kids to school, and social services so if somebody doesn't have a net, there's a net for them. And I just, I don't think that what we saw today in the political landscape of Illinois was, I just think it was ugly. And again, I'm not going to argue with you because I'm not advocating for one political party or the other. I hold both parties to the feet to the fire. This is not a Democrat or Republican thing. I'm not on here talking about how the Democrats have all the answers and the Republicans are doing all this stuff. This is as a middle of the road taxpayer in the state of Illinois. I'm embarrassed that 1,000 people got laid off today because of mismanagement, because of ideology, and because there's no compromise in politics anymore. That just shouldn't be happening in the land of Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. Come on. Anyway, there's other stuff going on. Not really. The Oscars are going to put together some sweeping changes to how they deal with minority nominations. That's good. And it also confirms what I think we were talking about earlier, Pete, just about the idea, like this week we're talking, you know, it's just old Hollywood at the helm of the Academy. Okay. Oh, let's, where's why we should give another award to Warren Beatty. You know, like, we've given him 4 awards already. Well, give him another. He's great. And where's my new martini? So it's good to see that they're going to try to change the way that the boards, that's where, you know, and I don't think that deals with the bigger problem in Hollywood, which is that, you know, it is a predominantly white industry that tells predominantly white stories. And so that's why you constantly have this battle for nominations and awards. But let's go back to the root of the issue. Award shows are dumb in the first place. This is why I boycott Oscar parties. Me and Spike Lee, we should get together and have our own Oscar party. I boycott it because everyone's so serious about it. He's got more serious issues. Me, I'm just like, all right, calm down on the best costumes. It's okay that I add a little snark. Anyway, the story I saw Chicago police are warning residents that if you keep your doors to your cars unlocked, that could be a recipe for more theft. They're warning residents, saying make sure you lock your doors, which is kind of like the no-brainer of the year. But maybe it's not, because you give another, as someone who lived in Wicker Park and has experienced this with your cars, maybe there's something more to this.
Yeah, lived in Wicker Park, and it was a nice area. It wasn't horrible, but we were in an area where there was an L, and our alley was kind of backed up to a lot of noise, so we'd park our cars back there, and my roommate got his car busted, broken into a couple of times, and he didn't have any. He had like maybe some change, and he never really had anything in there, but they would dig and dig and whatever. So eventually he just said that he was leaving his doors open. He left his doors
right.
unlocked.
Of course.
And if anybody wanted to come and take something, they could just peek in, but he wouldn't have, he didn't have to replace a broken window, which cost, $600
that's,
or whatever.
That's actually pretty smart. And I've had a lot of friends who've had, I've been fortunate enough to never have my car broken into, mostly because I've still got a cassette tape. But, or if they're really interested in, like, toys that have, like, broken, like the Transformer with the broken head off, like that, they don't really want that.
Yeah, this wasn't an issue of people stealing the car.
Right. They just want what's in it.
They just want what's in it, yeah. So that he felt comfortable leaving his
Because at the end
unlocked.
Of the day, you end up having to go to the body shop or wherever and get the window replaced, and it can cost you $400, $500, whatever it is. So not only did you lose the cigarettes or whatever you left on your dashboard,
right.
but you're paying $500. That's it. I never thought about it that way. I guess if I lived in an area where that had happened to me, and I know that it was predominantly that was a prevalent to have people break into cars, I'd probably leave my door open too.
When I was working at the Foot Locker in high school, back at the Chicago Ridge Mall, my car was
no
broken.
No big deal.
My car was broken into, and for my stereo, Pontiac Grand Am stereo system, it was really choice.
Yeah, right on.
But I walked. So this is like at 9:30. You work until 9, shut the store down, then you go out there at 9:30, and then maybe go to a Bennigan's with the rest of the folks.
Sure. Talk about all the cool sneakers you sold.
And then, so I look, and I get towards my car, and the parking lot's sort of empty, and I see the window's broken. I'm like, oh, no, son of a gun. I look, and there, my thing is stolen. So then I kind of glance around the parking lot. Perhaps the guy he just did it. I could see somebody, and I notice a string of cassettes, which I had like in a box. And the person must have taken the cassettes, ran off with, and then was judging me. I was like looking at him, and then like tossing them around. It was like a breadcrumb trail of cassettes that he didn't like.
Do you remember what he didn't like?
It was like, I was like really into like, indie rock. So, like Dinosaur Junior's first,
Spandau Ballet. What's
Spandau
this?
Ballet.
So like the whole parking lot was filled with like all of my cassettes that I had to set in the car.
Man. God, you gotta feel bad. And you can't play them, and now you have to be like, oh, no one likes my music.
Right. It hurt me double.
There you go. I would say a very topical song for this week. Of course, the death of Glenn Frey, but also the heat is on. It's the basketball. It's after Christmas. We're coming into the All-Star break for the NBA. We talked about hockey last night. Tonight we talk about the Bulls, who lost tonight against the Boston Celtics. The Celtics seem to have the Bulls' number. They just seem to be that kind of team that's younger, scrappier, and the Bulls just always look like they don't care. Sam Bajnanovic covers basketball for WGN Radio, and you can find his stuff on WGNRadio.com. Sam, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. By the way, did you catch the Ray Clay piece yet?
No.
You got to check it out. Rob, I know you've heard it. Rob, As he stands up and walks away. No, we had Ray Clay.
What's that?
I'm asking about Ray Clay. You heard it.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Yeah, I listened to the whole thing.
I got him to do the introduction for MJ over the phone. Yeah. He was all about it. He was the voice of the dynasty that sat courtside to the PA.
And over the phone, he was just as good as he was when he used to do it for real. It was good.
Well, check that out, WGNRadio.com. I'll listen tonight. Let's start there, because there's been a lot of fanfare this week for the 90s Bulls. The Golden State Warriors came through town. Johnny Bock died. There were some great stories in Deadspin about Jordan and Pippen. It just seems like right now there's a lot going on.
Some of those
on.
I know are true for a fact. The others I can't confirm.
There's a lot going on the nostalgia trip when it comes to the 90s Bulls right now.
Right, yeah. Steve Kerr was in town. He brought his entire staff to Johnny Bock's services, and Fred Hoiberg did the same. They actually, both coaching staffs, most of them were absent at their shoot-arounds in the morning because they were at Old St. Pat's Church paying respects to Johnny Bock, and a lot of former players came through. And, he was the guy. He got here in 86, so he sort of – now, you have the talent. That always helps when you have Jordan and you get Pippen and Horace Grant, but you implement that Doberman defense style where you pressure the ball, pressure the wings – that system helped, and with his defense, they got past Detroit. They won three in a row, and he got fired, I think, in 94 over the Scottie Pippen thing from Deadspin. The source, of course, saying that Jerry Krause wanted to trade Pippen, and Bock said whoever wants to trade Scottie Pippen is an idiot, essentially.
And it's funny because this was right after the Knicks series where Pippen – didn't go in for that, for the 0.7 or what was it, 1.7, and Kukoc hit that shot. There, I could see any GM in any sport wanting to go into the offseason going, that guy's trouble, he's got to go. But Bock stood up for Pippen saying, he made a mistake, he's a young kid, keep him around because he can do good things. Krause held it against him.
Bock was a military guy, though. Remember, he was in the service, and he still had that eagle tattoo across his chest. And I remember the stories, obviously I wasn't in the locker room at the time, but that Johnny Bock, once the team got something done on his end of the ball, because he was the defensive coordinator, he was in charge of the defense. And when the defense would shut out Larry Bird or Magic Johnson or Isaiah Thomas, he would come out and throw out the card, the Ace of Spades, which was, of course, the card for death.
Right.
And that was the way that he celebrated, how he motivated, and those players ate it up.
Well, if you're a Chicago Bulls fan of any generation, you know that the Chicago Bulls won all those championships, not just for Michael Jordan scoring 40, 50 points. It had to do with the defense. How much did they keep that spirit? Because Bock, you listen to Pippen, you listen to Jordan, they talk about Johnny Bock being the guy who essentially taught him how to play defense. How much did that stay with them even though Bock left?
Well, it lasted with them through the six championships until 98. And of course it helps when you bring in a guy like Dennis Rodman, who's one of the best defenders in the history of the league, both man to man. And then of course the collection of rebounds that he picked up over the years, but that sort of went away. They weren't playing any defense when they had the kids, Curry and Chandler. And they drafted them early 2000s. That was when the whole thing blew up and they finally got back into a defensive style under Tom Thibodeau. And Tibbs was here 5 years. They went to the playoffs five times. Mm-hmm. They won a lot of basketball games. And it wasn't often that another coach would come in and out-coach Tibbs. You feel me on that? Tibbs wouldn't get out-coached. He got the most out of his players, and he game-planned the right way.
He got out-talented.
He would overcome a talent gap. I don't know that Fred Hoiberg has done that this season.
That's a nice transition as we go from the defensive legacy of Johnny Bock to the defensive production of this season's Bulls. It's just not there. Tonight they gave up 110 points to the Celtics. Their philosophy is to spread the floor and put up a lot of points. They're not really doing that, and they're getting beat on the floor with just teams putting up way too many points.
I think Hoiberg's theory is that the more possessions, the more points, and that's how offensive-minded coaches think, and that's fine to have that logic. I mean, that's essentially the Warriors' logic, but they back it up defensively. Now, if you look at some of the numbers, the Bulls, I guess, in field goal percentage, they're ninth in the league out of 30 teams. But if you look at the last 15 games, they've given up 100 like 11 times. And that's not a recipe.
Which is almost, was almost unheard of in the Timps era. I mean, they didn't give up 100 that often.
Now, they didn't score as many points, but, I mean, the possessions have increased and because they come down and they shoot a lot of jump shots. I mean, the Warriors game, if you watch that Bulls-Warriors game, Derrick Rose had 29 points and 2 assists, and he should have had 12 assists. I mean, he was passing to wide-open guys.
They were just
Gasol
missing.
Was 0 for 8. I think Snell was 1 for 6. McDermott was 1 for 6. Mirotić was 0 for 5. They just weren't hitting shots.
Now, these are all the guys. Now, you just mentioned 4 guys. I mean, Gasol, let's put him to the side. But let's talk Snell, McDermott.
What do they have in common?
Well, and Mirotić, they all came in the last two. These are the Gar Foreman guys that were
brought in. And we've talked about this. This has been the shift in the roster. It didn't just happen this year.
Right.
Because they knew, and they don't have to admit it because we already know it. They've been planning this for years. And they brought in guys that they thought could contribute more under a free-flowing style, more offensive, more connecting on jump shots. That's the Fred Hoiberg mantra. That's what he did at Iowa State. All those guys can shoot. They play defense, but they're better scorers than they are defenders. And that was the plan here. Has it worked out this year? They're 24-18 in a weak Eastern Conference.
Well, let's take a break. As we come back, let's talk some more NBA because big news today, David Blatt out as the Cavs coach. We were just talking, Pete and I were just talking about, you know, is that the kind of thing you could see in Chicago where, you know, the Cavs are the number one seed. They got a 3-game lead. They've only lost 11 games, but they're like, this is not enough. Do the Bulls have that kind of mettle to say, you know what, it's not working. Hoiberg, you're out.
No. That's their guy. He's much better around the staff. He's a lot friendlier. He's likable, and he's on the same page with the front office, and they're okay with that. That being said, though, you got to win to hang on. He signed a big deal. You know, it's millions. You know, it's in the $20, $25 million range. That's some serious money.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk NBA talk and also the verbal commitment story. I want to get your
Jim Harbaugh
take on that.
Is a psycho.
Jim Harbaugh, University of Michigan. Sam Panjanovic in studio. Stay with us. There you go. A little music for you there. And now, Sam Panjanovic in studio. Big news, the Cleveland Cavaliers fired their head coach. And the best part is they say that LeBron James had nothing to do with it.
Everything you say, when I think you say Cleveland Cavaliers, I just equate it in my mind. Cleveland Cavaliers equals LeBron James.
Right.
Because every move that they make is orchestrated by him. I don't care what they say. They claim that he had no input on this. Are you out of your mind? Did you guys see the videos of him bushing his coach? Last year in the playoff, he shoved his coach, like his coach was trying to argue with one of the referees, his head coach of an NBA team, and LeBron just pushed him.
Why does a guy like David Blatt get fired? I don't understand. What are they saying? They don't like what the team's doing, being number one in the East?
That's the claim that they don't, I guess, see the same sort of game plan. They don't vision the same coaching style that he's provided them. I think he's done a pretty decent job. He showed a couple blunders in the playoffs, too, when he tried to have LeBron inbound the ball in game 4. Mm-hmm. Remember that? It was game 4. The Bulls were up 2-1, games in Chicago, and this is on record. LeBron even talked about it after the game. That
he's not inbound.
David Blatt wanted LeBron to inbound the ball to somebody else, and LeBron said, "No, dude, I'm taking the shot." And he took the shot, and they won the game, and they ended up winning the series. So,
well, you know, I mean, they didn't win it. They didn't win last year, but they got there, and they lost to Golden State, which is arguably, you know, is creating a at least a, you know, argument for dynasty at this point. You know, the fact that the way they're playing ball. I mean, they're winning in the East. Kyrie Irving was out for most of the beginning of the season. I mean, they are the odds-on favorite to go back. Seems like a weird move. Does a move like this energize a team like the Cavs, or does it? I mean, what? I mean, they're just having a bench coach come in and coach the rest of the year, right?
It could energize them, but at the end of the day, essentially, the Eastern Conference, at least in my opinion, is French doors to get your ass kicked by the Warriors.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's like congratulations, you know, now you get to play Golden State, and have you seen Golden State play? They won at Cleveland by 34. They won in Chicago by 31. Those are the two best teams in the East on the road by 65 points.
Very interesting. The rumored mill is heating up in the NBA because we're getting closer to midseason. DeMarcus Cousins' name gets thrown around. You know, we had talked about him coming to Chicago for a trade, and we had talked on this show about they should have done that a couple of years ago. They could have.
Had the option.
Now it shifts to Cleveland, and there's talk that, you know, Kevin Love could be shipped.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the trade talk is always interesting. I don't have many fish in the water. I don't know much about the trade market, and I haven't really heard a lot of stuff. But since we're talking about trades, let's, you know, play revisionist history for a second. Would you like to have that trade back when Cleveland shipped Andrew Wiggins to Minnesota for Kevin Love?
Right.
I mean, Andrew Wiggins is a stud.
But Wiggins plays LeBron's position, doesn't he?
But at the same time, that's what you need. You need somebody who's going to get out there and defend people and can also score going to the hole. Kevin Love, he played a lot of basketball up in Minnesota, and I promise you, nobody was watching. You know, he was like the cool guy, got a lot of rebounds, made a lot of threes. But to play with LeBron, you have to be able to create and put the ball on the floor. And Kevin Love has been lost in that equation.
Let me ask you this, because I don't pay that close attention to the NBA. What's been the most surprising team this season for Sam Pagnotta?
I think Boston has been exceptionally surprising. The 23-21, that's a young roster. We talk about coaching all the time. You know how Tom Thibodeau would give the Bulls more wins than they should have. Maybe, you know, they maybe should have gotten less. Brad Stevens is a basketball savant. He is a guru. He took a lot of less talented Butler teams, two Final Fours, one national championship game, got hired as one of the youngest coaches in the league. He is brilliant, and he's one of those guys that just knows who to play against who. They attacked Rose tonight, and they find other teams' weaknesses, and they capitalize. And they've been very good for a team that I don't think they have a superstar,
right?
Boston. You know, that's just a really good, really smart, really educated team.
Is Marcus Smart on the team? Who's on the
team? Marcus Smart's on the team.
I always liked him at Oklahoma State.
Jared Sullinger, Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, who's about 5'7 or 5'8 point guard who played at Washington.
All right, let me ask you. Let me move to high school hoops, and then I want to ask you about this verbal commitment stuff that Jim Harbaugh. But we talked about this last week or week before about Morgan Park and Simeon. The boycott parents said they didn't want to play. CPS said, okay, we're not going to do that. But they came back and they said they're going to play that game, and they're going to play it at Morgan Park.
Right. The boycott actually did its job. They said that if it wasn't in Morgan Park's gym, they were going to forfeit no matter what. I guess everybody came to the same equation that, okay, we're going to play it now in Morgan Park's gym, capacity only 250. They're going to play it on Thursday the 28th.
Is there an issue there? I mean, 250, there's only 250 bodies that can get in
for
a game.
They can fit 3,000 people in if they had the capacity. If Morgan Park's gym had 3,000 people, that game would be sold out, I promise. That's the issue. The issue's money because CPS doesn't have money.
All right, so the last story, Jim Harbaugh is taking heat because he has sort of gone back on some verbal commitments from a 2016 class, includes a kid out of Downers Grove. But really, this is something that is done a lot in college football, just not done around these parts.
It's done a lot in the SEC, and I don't know if you've been reading it, you and your cars are listening right now. Teddy Greenstein's been all over this for the Trib, and he has plotted it out very well in the paper about how this happens in the SEC all the time. Nick Saban at Alabama, you know, you've got Les Miles at LSU, you've got the Florida contingent down there, they've had Urban Meyer's been through there. This happens all the time where you get a bunch of talented players, and sometimes you can get more talented players, and you sort of lift that commitment and tell somebody to look elsewhere. I mean, this is what this is, and I feel bad for Eric Swenson, who's an offensive lineman at Downers Grove. He committed in 2013, November 25th, 2013, to Brady Hoke. And that's strung him along.
That's a big part of this, too. It's not even Harbaugh's guy.
But at the same time, last month, if you read the Tribune, the offensive line coach called Swenson and said, we can't wait to see you on campus. We can't wait to get you in the program. And here we are where he's calling back to the school Jim Harbaugh doesn't want to talk to him. The assistant coach is distant.
Besides bruised ego, does it affect the kid in trying to find a college to attend? Because he's a blue chip guy.
Alabama gave him an offer.
They're all going to give him offers. So I mean, we feel bad because it's never been done up here, but he's going to land at a big school.
He'll land on his feet. His name is publicized. Watch Urban Meyer at Ohio State give him a scholarship. I'm serious. Those two, they haven't really been competitors, Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh, for a long time, but there's this soap opera storyline between these two because really intense.
Let me ask you as we wrap up here, why so much consternation over this in the Big Ten? I don't understand. I mean, if it's happening all the time in Alabama and LSU, why can't Jim Harbaugh and the University of Michigan do this?
It's about the rings. It's about winning. It's about doing what you have to do to be the best. And Jim Harbaugh is a control freak. We've talked about the stories of
NFL coach.
Him getting an NFL offensive lineman and MFing them. You know, and these guys are 5 feet taller and 100 pounds bigger, and he's like going off on them, and they're like,
"See, I wonder where he learned that."
Hold on a second, like, dude, chill
out.
I know
exactly where he learned that. There's a great clip where he throws the pick. He throws a pick, and he walks
comes
back
out, and like Dick is ready to kill him. Dick is ready to pick him up by his throat.
Physically touches the quarterback, like you see him, like just like he's so mad. But that's such a great clip. So Jim Harbaugh learned from the best. Sam Panjanovic, WGN Sports. Thanks so much for coming on and updating us on the NBA and other stories.
You got it.
The big story.
Well, that's going to do it tonight. We'll be back on Monday. Jay Levine, the newscaster who's moving to special contributor at CBS, is going to be our guest at the big table. We'll talk to him about his career in Chicago, covering news and what it takes to do that job. Coming up next, we're going to have Patty Vasquez. I'm interested. She had a great conversation last night with, I think, is it Representative Martwick or Senator Martwick?
Representative Robert Martwick.
There you go. That was really good. I was listening on the way home last night. He was in studio, and they were talking about politics and what's happening. It's almost, you know, I can't wait to hear Patty tonight just because, you know, what happened today with the social service agencies and the cuts at the end of the day were 750 people laid off. It goes right to what Representative Martwick was saying last night.